Welcome to another PICcast, the podcast series by MSD Animal Health for and by professionals in the swine sector. I'm Rubén del Pozo, Technical Director Swine in Uran at MSD Animal Health. And today we have the pleasure of talking to Professor Thomas Norton. Thomas is professor at KU Leuven in Belgium. Welcome, Thomas, and thanks for sharing this time with us.
No problem. Thanks to you for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, how are you?
I'm very good. The weather here in Belgium is quite nice at the moment, and we're coming close to a little bit of vacation time, which is always nice. The students have left the university, so all is very quiet, and we can get on with more of the, the more research-oriented work. So we're all very happy at the moment, and yeah, looking forward to a little bit of a break in the next couple of weeks.
In this couple of weeks, nice. I'm now a little bit jealous because the weather here in Spain those days is really, really hot.
Yeah, it's, I know, I see the forecast, it's quite extreme. But the other difference is you can be guaranteed some warm weather. Here in Belgium, it's the same in Ireland. I'm originally Irish, and it's one day to the next, it can change a lot. So we're happy with some nice weather, and if it's stable, we're even happier. So at the moment, it's not too bad. But I know that you're a little bit suffering in Spain. I can see that these days. It's quite a hot scenario down there.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you're Irish and you live in Belgium. Maybe I assume that most of the audience will know you, but it will be better if you introduce yourself. Why an Irish guy is now living in Belgium?
So I'm originally Irish. I was born in the heart of Ireland, in a place called Tipperary, close to the main dairy production part of Ireland, which is the Golden Vale. And so I think for me, agriculture was always in my blood. My parents were in the agricultural sector. My father also had a suckler farm, and we're involved in agricultural machinery. And yeah, it was always something that was in us, and it's also very strong in the community. And so I continued to do agriculture for my chosen education, and did that in UCD. I did a bachelor in that and majored more in the engineering technology side, and then went and did a PhD in biosystems engineering, looking at calf housing, which I always knew from a very young age was a problem, because we often tried to house young calves, and sometimes we were not successful, because calves are very susceptible to respiratory illnesses. And so I knew it from a young age, the challenges that farmers faced housing young calves, and it was also part of the motivation I had to try and find out some things about how to house them in my PhD. And there I got interested in the modeling and a little bit the technical engineering side. And so I was always interested in making the connection between engineering and animal production. And when I was looking around, actually, it was interesting because there was not that many people doing it. It was always like people were very deep in the animal science or genetics or physiology, but there were very few people trying to make a connection. But I remember towards the latter stage of my PhD, coming across work of Professor Daniel Berkmans and his team in the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium, where I'm now. And I was really fascinated because there was research that was trying to treat an animal in the way an engineer would look on an engineering system, like a car or any kind of motor machine, but trying to recognize how the animal responds and brings that in the way of thinking of how you would model and then monitor these animals. And I was really fascinated by that, I have to say. So I, at the end of my PhD, I started communication with Daniel and his team. And in the meanwhile, I picked up a position in the UK. I started as a lecturer in a quite known institute in Shropshire in the UK. It's a real agricultural university called Harper Adams University. and I was based in the agricultural engineering department there. And meanwhile, I was keeping up my research, trying as best as I could with the teaching. And I had a fortunate encounter in 2015 with Professor Berkmans, Daniel, in Brazil, where I was invited. He was also invited to this conference, and we just got talking and talking about precision livestock farming and the future of it, and it was fascinating. And he convinced me that I should spend a little bit of time in the research team. And yeah, here I am still. He retired in the meantime, and I took his position, and it's one of the best decisions of my life, to be honest. It's a fantastic place to work, fantastic team of people. And I think the domain is also extremely fascinating, actually.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yes, an impressive CV, and we see that you have been moving from different countries, first Ireland, then UK, and finally Belgium. So let's go into a little bit of discussion. The topic for today will be precision livestock farming. You are an expert on that. But before we jump into directly into this topic, I would like to have your opinion about the current situation in Europe. We know that the pig producers, they are facing many challenges. What are the main ones in your opinion?
Yeah, I'll have to talk a little bit about the challenges we face here in Flanders, because I think it's a very good country to show Yeah, the early issues that might emerge in the sector, in the production sector. And why is it a good country or a region? Because, it's one of the most populous regions in Europe. There is 500 people per square kilometer. It's almost the same as in the Netherlands. So it means it's a peri-urban environment. So you have the urban city culture, you have also rural, you have agriculture, industry, all quite close, and nature, of course, all situated quite close to each other. And so it means that everything should work on a reasonable balance. And when there is one part of this system that is not working effectively or causing pollution streams, yeah, it's very quick that the government has to act, because there's such a population density. And I think at the moment we're seeing a little bit of that when it comes to livestock production. Particularly, I would say pig production is coming under a lot of pressure. And the reason is that, we know that there is a lot of emissions of nitrogen, particularly ammonia, from livestock. And yeah, we can talk also from dairy barns, but we see as well from pig production, there is a lot of emissions. These emissions are becoming deposited on sites of natural habitats, these are designated as Natura 2000 sites across Europe. And currently in Flanders, a lot of these sites have nitrogen levels above what is acceptable. And given that most of that ammonia emission is from livestock buildings, livestock is coming under pressure. And it's been coming under pressure also from other angles with respect to animal welfare, particularly when it comes to docking of tails and castration for pigs. But I would say at the moment, the biggest one on the agenda is certainly the environmental one. And, it's a little bit of a case where farmers have been always under a bit of pressure to keep up producing food that is cost effective for the consumer. And over the years, and particularly if you look from, say, even just 2000 to 2022 here in Flanders, you can see in the pig sector that there was a halving in terms of the number of pig farms. So it's gone from around 6,000 to 3,000 farms currently. But meanwhile, if you look at each farm, you would see a doubling on average of the number of animals.
So there's less farms and more animals.
Yeah. Exactly. So So if we then look to the environmental issues, we can see, okay, yeah, there is a consolidation issue that has happened over the past 20 years. And as well as that, not only the size of the farms themselves, but also they've moved to part of the region, part of Flanders, West Flanders, where there is more better access to manure processing facilities, feed mills, and so on. So the consolidation is really happening in a spatial way as well. And when you look to the pollution issue, you can see that it's concentrated around these parts. And it's also, you can't blame the farmer to an extent. They're always trying to maximize economies of scale to produce food that's cheap enough at the high quality that the consumer expects. And this is a natural thing that happens. And now the government reaction to this, because there is in fact pollution, there is this degradation of the Natura 2000 sites, that the knee-jerk reaction, I think a little bit, is to reduce the size of the sector. And pigs are being hit the hardest here in Flanders by 30%. And I think it's the same in the Netherlands also. So a little bit what happens in the Netherlands is often after a while considered strongly and usually taken on here in Flanders. And so we're seeing this this move towards by 2030 to reduce the sector by 30%. That's one way of dealing with this environmental issue, of course, but it's a very difficult way for the farmers.
Yeah, you mentioned something that is quite interesting. We cannot blame the farmers. In the last years, we have seen that the public opinion, the government, they put a lot of pressure on the producers. They are doing really, really great. They are reducing antibiotics. They are improving the welfare of the animals. They are now working on the reduction of the emissions. But now in the last month, you see, for example, some regions in Europe, you mentioned already Flanders, Netherlands, where the policymakers, they are even adding more pressure to the producers, meaning that in some way, and this is my personal concern, but I have been speaking with many other people and they have the same concern, it looks like the policymakers, they are putting so much pressure, helping the farmers to close the farms, like the goal is shrinking the pig production. Do you think that this is the way to go for a greener planet, or there is another solution, in your opinion?
Yeah, you're right. Like we see the situation, agree to reduce the reduce the sector by 30%. You know, in one way, I can also understand it, because like when you think about the production of meat and we talk about pork here in Belgium, we produce 75% more pork than what is consumed. So there's, out of the 100% of animals that are produced, 75% of that is exported. So that you know, and that means that there is kind of a reliance on these markets too, these external markets, which makes it that you know, it's a quite volatile sector to be involved with, and there is no doubt that, you know, from an environmental side, reducing the size of the farms will improve, or at least, of course, because there is not as much farms emitting ammonia, that will reduce the contamination of these Natura 2000 sites. Also, from a stability-wise, economically seen, it also can make sense to reduce so that you don't rely completely on your export market. There can be a win-win. And I think it's about balance. It's about recognizing what the point is that you can stop with this. And why is that? Because, Europe, across Europe, we focus a lot on producing healthy, high welfare animals with good quality meat. We have a good quality standards in our production process, and we can stand over these. And therefore, it's not just about the impact on the environment, but it's the overall impact on society, like in terms of the welfare standards, the health standards, the reduction in antibiotic use. And I think looking from that perspective, we can say, okay, what is the point just to shrink it completely given the high standards we have? Why don't we try and recognize these standards, but enable farmers to manage their animals better and more profitably and reduce the environmental burden with technology? I think technology is there to help farmers. And of course, it's a balance, it's a game of balance. But in the end, there will be a technology-driven side and also this reduction aspect. And I think we're looking for the right balance at the moment. But of course, the Netherlands, like I said, and Belgium will always take action first because of the population density. And that's what we're seeing their perspective being that this is the fastest way to reduce the impacts on the environment, reduce the size of the sector.
So the message that I get here from you is that we need to move into more in a more sustainable and efficient pig production, and that the precision livestock farming, the technology, in other words, may help us a lot in here to be more efficient and more sustainable in the future, and be able to produce the same amount of food, of meat that we need to feed the world with less resources.
Yeah, I think that's really the message. But I do think, okay, we don't have to oversupply the world with pigs. There is a point. For instance, we saw with the African swine fever problem in China when there was a big demand for European pork, and producers were producing and scaling to meet that demand. And then, of course, now China more or less is starting to produce internally, and that demand is no longer there. And you see the effects rippling through Europe, and we see it in Belgium, and it's all over Europe. Of that, the prices are quite volatile, and farmers then try and they find it difficult to survive in this because the prices they're getting for their meat are not high enough. So there is a good argument to reduce the size of the sector so that we don't rely too heavily on these kind of volatile export markets. But at the same time, okay, when we have this balance where we can supply comfortably our own country and some neighboring countries, and then we can do that with a mixture of a certain size of production plus the technology to try and minimize these negative impacts on the environment. I think it's a mix. That's my overall message.
Yeah, this balance between trade and production in some way is part of the sustainability puzzle that we need to play with in the next years.
Yeah.
So how can you are an expert on precision livestock farming. Maybe you can define that concept in one or two sentences and giving us a couple of examples.
So precision livestock farming is, it's really just the use of the right technology at the right moment to enable farmers better monitor their animals, both from a welfare, production, health, and reproduction perspective. So it's really a tool that will give the farmers the support that they need. We've seen a lot of developments, particularly coming from the research side. There isn't huge amount of translation into real practical tools because, of course, it's a developing field. But these products are starting to come more and more on the market. And for instance, some examples, one example you could talk about, which is quite clearly quite successful on the market, is sound monitoring in pig production for monitoring respiratory health of pigs. There are also other technologies for Monitoring the health status, but this the, more like a platform technology where the farmer inputs information, transaction information on the pigs at different stages of their life cycle, and just documents the use of medication and feed and so on. And a lot of this is digitized now, and farmers can see relationships between different variables using nice platform technologies. And these tools are now more available and more easy to use. And I would say the sound device is quite useful for monitoring the health. And that's really going to the response of the animal. And I think that's where we will see more and more technology in the future, looking to the responses of the animal. And in the end, I don't think it's that far away that we'll see the individual animal being monitored. And so the consumer then will actually be able to get information on each individual animal if they want that. It's not that the consumer will want this, but yeah, they will in the future be able to get that information. And therefore we'll have a kind of a digital representation, an understanding of the pig, how it's performing, what its welfare status is, health status, and it'll be completely digitized. And that's what I think the future will be. And that will be one way of improving the sustainability of our livestock systems. So it's really a way of farming, using technologies to support the farmer meets his different targets, both from production perspective, but also health and welfare.
Yeah, for those that we are not experts on technology or on precision livestock farming, when we think about it, immediately we always comes to our mind the ways to record or to monitor animals. And the two main ways that now came to my mind is microphone or camera. And sometimes I want to ask you a question. Many times we ask the kids this kind of mean question. Who do you love more, mom or dad? So I'm going to ask you the same question, microphone or camera, and what are the pros and cons of both technologies, of course?
Well, do I give the answer I give my children? I love them all equally as much. To be honest, they each have their own benefits and limitations, of course. With sound, you don't need any light. You can turn off the lights. You don't need a direct line of sight to a particular object. And you can extract a lot of information. And it's very good. And it's a remote monitoring system. And I think that's actually, if I would just to start again, I would say both cameras and microphones are remote monitoring systems. And that means that you have the capacity to monitor many individual animals with one device. And that brings a lot of opportunity because it means that you can extract many different indicators from these, but also you can have the potential for a high return on investment if you can demonstrate that to the farmer. Because one device can cover a pen and maybe multiple pens or even half a room. And so therefore you can get a lot of information that way. But going again to the microphone versus the camera, the microphone has its positives, its negatives. And for me, the main negative is that you can't monitor the individual animal so well with microphones. It's possible, but not cost effective. In research, it could be done, but not cost effectively. And I think that's the biggest challenge. And that to me, it doesn't mean that it's not a useful technology. We see now the product developed by SoundTox. It's a really useful system, and it's on 100,000 plus farms. So therefore, it's clearly making a return on investment. But the opportunity for me is with the cameras, where you can get down to the individual animal level And there I spoke earlier about this having a digital representation of each individual animal. And if we look to the future, the camera can possibly give us that kind of information. Of course, there are limitations with the camera. And one of it is sometimes, you know yourself, everything in a pig house gets dirty after a while, and the lens of a camera gets very dirty. And sometimes you're wondering also, are the size of these cobwebs in the pig pens? It's not possible. But of course, there's sometimes spider webs over the lens, and sometimes you're tracking a spider and a fly rather than the pigs. But in the end, I think these are practical things that can be surmounted, and it just takes a lot of work to demonstrate the value, and then the engineering afterwards to make it a practical solution. And we are starting to see practical solutions with cameras coming on. I mean, it started back in the late 80s, 90s with the development of camera weighing systems that went from 3D camera-based weighing, which was done actually in Leuven back in the early 90s, to actually more practical 2D weighing system that was done also in the 90s in Silso Research Institute. And that went then to the market, actually. So that was one of the very early camera-based solutions on the market. And that was there since the mid-90s onwards. And of course, in the meantime, it's developed a lot, and the accuracy has developed. And I think that's what we're seeing, that the technology is progressing in the market, driven by other industries that are more high value or high net worth, we see that, as we can bring these technologies into agricultural applications, the accuracy that they now afford can bring us better quality results, and therefore in the future also possible better return on investment for the farmer. And that's I think, the possibility for camera solutions in the future. So I really think that it's one of the technologies that we can expand on in the future, for sure.
Yeah, so I see now, I'm surprised about all the solutions that can offer us the technology, pig detection, individual tracking, behavior, disease detection, many different topics. One of the barriers that many farmers, they may have, is the return of investment. They need to see the benefit of implementing this from an economic perspective. How do you think that we can make to make visible this return of investment to the farmers?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think it's a question. A lot of engineers like to work with technology, but in the end, it's not about playing with technology. It's really about trying to recognize the needs of the end user, the stakeholder, and how can you actually bring a solution to them rather than just playing with a technology. It's about a solution for a stakeholder. And I say stakeholder instead of farmer here, because I think it's not always that the farmer will have the direct benefit of a technology. For instance, if we think who else in the allied industry can benefit in when it comes to animal production, pig production, we see breeding companies can benefit for better quality monitoring methods to extract interesting phenotypes that can help them breed more robust pigs, more welfare, with better welfare, better growth rates, and feed conversion, and so on. I mean, and then you can also see how animal health companies can benefit if we can detect disease onset early and move towards a better understanding of the etiology of the disease to enable better diagnosis for vets. I mean, these are other stakeholders that can benefit from a technology development before the farmer even really sees it. And I think therein is the opportunity. And I take the example of the breeding companies because they really want high quality data that they can trust and they can bring into their modeling in their breeding program. And that means extracting interesting phenotypes of behavior, health, growth, and structure of the animal in an accurate way. The key thing is accuracy for them. So they're really, the bar is set very high by that stakeholder. But of course, the value of what you can produce if you develop a technology that can produce such accurate results, the value of that is very high to them. So that the initial cost in technology development is in some way carried during that phase with this stakeholder, which has a very high demand. And then the question is, can we find the overlap between what we do at this stage and what the farmer needs? Because you can always decrease the resolution to a level what the farmer needs. And you can do that from a good starting point where you've left off with the stakeholder. In this case, I mentioned the breeding company. So I think, and it's at that moment where you say, okay, what is the overlap? What is it that the farmer needs? What does he need to quantify his welfare? Maybe he doesn't need a very accurate pig detection model or a very accurate tracking model to track every animal and detect their behaviors and to see what pig is tail biting another pig or biting another pig's tail. I mean, it's very interesting for the breeding company, but less so for the farmer. They want indicators that they can act on to improve their productivity and also capture relevant welfare information. But the resolution is less, and I think it's finding that is the challenge. And it takes a long time to find that. I mean, if you look to the example of a high-tech PLF company called SoundTox, who started up around 2012, I mean, it's not something that happens overnight to generate that return on investment. It takes a lot of work together with the farmers. But I think the starting point of all of this is from more the research and development, but finding that stakeholder who is willing to invest in it, and then from then
in that
on,
technology.
Yeah, then bring that down to find the overlap with the farmer's needs. And that's really where I think the benefits. And I think when it comes to the camera solutions, for the animal weighing, the indicator was very clear cut. Farmers need the weight of their pigs, so they know at the moment that the pigs need to go to the factory. But when it comes to behavior and these issues, farmers might think, it's interesting from welfare. I like to know about welfare, but do I need to track every single pig? They don't need this.
Yeah.
But we can just do that development with the breeding company who do need this. And then later on find what the farmer needs. And I think that's, we're still at this part where we're doing the development at the moment.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing all this information. It's quite impressive. I think I would like to continue talking all day with you. I have learned a lot. I'm totally sure that our colleagues that are listening also, they are learning really a lot, but I think it's time to close this meeting. Thank you very much, Thomas. And as a matter of conclusion, I would like to say Precision Life Stock Farming has arrived and will stay with us here in the pig sector. And we are glad of it. This will make us more efficient, more sustainable, and something that nowadays is of paramount importance if we want to survive in the next years. So again, thank you very much, Thomas.
Thank you, Ruben. I really enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you very much, and see you soon.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dear friends, we will meet in another podcast soon. It was a pleasure to be here today. And bye-bye for now.